Good afternoon. So, I am. I'm recording the audio separately on my phone as backup, just in case audio decides not to come out with my laptop. I rebooted, and I think things should work, but who knows? We'll see. So, but at least I have my phone doing audio as well. So let's talk about this. So, where are we now? We are now, we're at lecture 9. I really need to start talking about concurrency. And, but the thing that is, I think, of most important to you all is first assignment 1. So assignment 1 is supposed to be due right now on Monday. I extend it from the 2nd. But actually, our next assignment is due October 23rd. And we're right now, so it's due here because you're going to have one more tutorial the week of the 16th. And then, I think that's probably, I can push it off a little bit, but anyway, my first question is, do you want more time for the assignment? Or are you guys basically done? Yes? Yeah, I'm not planning, I'm going to move it to at least the 10th. Do you want till the end of next week? Okay. I can do it. Well, actually, what I'm going to do is I will give you till Thursday before class. Okay? Because next Thursday, I want to go over the solutions. Okay? I'm happy to put it off till next Thursday, but I don't want to put it off any further. Okay? So I'll just edit this now. So let's, just so it's there for everyone to see, so that makes it October 9th, October 12th. October 12th, 1 p.m. And I'll open up the submissions by tomorrow so you all can put that there. So, first off, that assignment there. The next thing is assignment 2 should also go up early next week. So along with the next tutorial. Well, the tutorial and the assignment will go up sometime next week. Next week there's no tutorial, of course, because next week there's Thanksgiving. So we don't have class on Monday. So kind of hard to schedule something in when two of your tutorials go away. So we'll do the following. Yes? So the reason why assignment two, the constraint we're getting into now is the midterm. So the midterm is November 2nd. And I really don't want, that's already pretty late. So the question is, when before that do I have the second assignment due? So the midterm review is October 31st. I could have that midterm review be when we go over the solutions for the second assignment, because basically the two assignments are there. Does that make sense? Okay, so I'll just go ahead and change that here. Good. So that's October 30th, I think. Is that right? No, 31st. So it's due on Halloween. Okay. I can't put it off any further because... Now, note, what that would mean is the solutions for the second assignment only go up then. You won't have access to the solutions over reading week. So,
Here, go back.
Go back?
Yeah, I'd rather we do it earlier so we get the results. And we have the answers.
Well, getting them all graded, I can't guarantee, but at least you should have the solutions. So that's originally why I put it on the 23rd. How about?
We do half of the week.
So is that the 23rd, the 26th? Sounds good.
And then you can post the.
I'll post the solutions on the 27th.
Perfect.
Okay, because, yeah, you're not going to do anything during the week, right? Okay, so October 26th. Okay. So that's what you're looking at. Manage your workload accordingly. Next, I wanted to ask, so on assignment one, I am happy to take questions. Apparently that, oh God, that's still on there, not finalized. It is finalized. If you see that up for too long, to remind me, and I can just like delete it. I put it in there just to say, I'm not done. Any questions on assignment one that you want me to, you know, because Tuesday you should all be set. I'd like to go on to new material, but if there's any kind of lingering things. Okay, cool. So let me fix my Emacs configuration. Yes. And now we can start talking about, what lecture are we on? Lecture 9? I was just looking at that. What lecture am I on? Okay. We're at lecture. Yeah. Lecture 9. Okay. So you saw a bit of Mmap in the last tutorial. How did tutorial 3 go? Fun? Have you gotten through all of it? You might want to spend more time on it if you haven't gotten through it. I'll just say that. When you see the next assignment, you'll see why. But also, it's the exercise. Think of the exercise I've given you kind of like practice math problems, is to try to help you understand the concepts. And so even if you don't do all of it in all detail, if there's part of it you go like, I don't know how I do that, that's a problem. You say, okay, I'm feeling a little lazy. I get how to write it, but I just don't want to write all the code right now. Okay, fine. But make sure you know the difference between the two. And if you're not confident, then make sure you actually do it, because you have this nice thing of the computer will tell you if you're right or not. Because if you can't get it to run, then you've missed something. But what I wanted to bring up here was a little description of Mmap. So length array specifies the length of map. If address is null, on Linux, the mapping will be created at a nearby page boundary. Page boundary. What's a page? Any thoughts? So it makes sense, well, certainly from context, it's a range of memory addresses. So, but it's a bit more than that. And so that's why I want to talk to you today, is really about virtual memory. And if you've been looking at the textbook, some of this, you know, these concepts should all be look familiar. If you haven't, then this might be a little newer. It might be a little harder to understand. So take it for what you will. So I've already talked about every process gets its own. So every process gets its own memory map. What do I mean by that? Its own range of addresses. So. So if you refer to address 2000 or what any address in any particular process, it is distinct from the address 2000 in other processes. Every process has its own range of memory addresses That way, when you load a process, you know, an executable into memory, you don't have to worry about making sure you aren't overlapping with memory of another process. It's all yours. So, but if you know anything about computer hardware is accessed by memory addresses. So you go, wait, every process has its own memory address range, yet in order to access the underlying resources, so every bit of RAM has a unique address. It has to. That's how you tell them apart. That's how the processor stores things into a location. Well, sorry, every byte. Our RAM is not bit addressable, it's byte addressable. When you give an address, you get back 8 bits. Or maybe long, or well, you can access it at a byte level granularity. So given that every byte has a unique address, when you load programs into memory, it has to be stored in some range of bytes. But every process can have its own address mapping. What does that tell you about what must be happening underneath the system? One of these is not like the other. The addresses that are used to access RAM is not the same as the addresses that processes use. They're both addresses, but they're completely different addresses. RAM. A process uses virtual addresses, but to actually put bytes into memory to store them, you have to put them in by their physical address. So here's the tricky part. We need a mechanism that translates from a virtual address to a physical address on every memory access. So that means when you access address 2000, somehow the system has to take that address 2000 for that particular process, you know, process 4512, and say, okay, what's address 2000 for, you know, so address. PID 45112. Some other address. It's got to be, there has to be some translation, and that. And this, you have to do this mapping fast, because that's it. You know, you do everything with addresses. You know, so if I say I really need it to be fast, what does that typically mean in a computer? It's low level. How low? How low can you go? Maybe the hardware. The hardware has to provide some mechanism to do this. Mapping is at runtime by hardware using information provided by the operating system. So one of the key jobs of the kernel is to tell the hardware how to map virtual to physical addresses for each process. Well, we'll say a core. When you say a CPU, we have multi-core systems. It really means, you know, a CPU. So when you switch from running one process to running another process, because of course you have a core and then you have this process. The process has a virtual CPU, logically. That's what the process has in part. That process has to be scheduled to run on a particular core. Part of that scheduling and part of saying, okay, now you have core 2. You get to run now. What memory mappings do you want to use? That has to be updated. Because then, once that mapping is established, all memory accesses can go to the actual physical memory where the stuff is stored. And if I tell you, wait, that virtual address has no physical mapping. Well, what if a process? So what is that? If you access a virtual address that has no corresponding physical address. Yeah. That's an error, right, of some kind. So what happens to a C program if you have a pointer that references memory that isn't valid? Seg fault. This is a seg fault. And in fact, this is a I mean, is that technically, yeah, bus errors and seg fault? There's a little distinction there, which I have to look up to check exactly what the conditions of each. But basically, you're going to get an error of some kind if you're accessing memory that you don't have a proper mapping. So what are you doing with mmap? Mmap is one tool for so basically, with mmap, you're manipulating the virtual address space. But instead of the virtual address space saying that this corresponds to RAM, so if so the two main uses of mmap are one is to get the contents, it's to map a file specifically in, but the other is to say, I just want some RAM. So if you just say, give me a mapping, but don't use any file for it. If you say don't use any file for it, make it read write, you've allocated RAM. But what you're really telling the kernel is saying, I want this range of virtual addresses to correspond to real physical memory because I want to store stuff there. So a natural question is, so why not just make them all valid? Why not just give it some RAM? Why can't I just put something everywhere? Why do I have to do this mapping things and allocating things? Can't I just use it? I mean, in a regular program, you can just create a variable and do things and it just appears. Why do we have to go through some trouble? Why do you have to tell the operating system this? Well, safe in what way? I mean, this would make it so you could never have a seg fault. Because you could access all of memory. Well, okay, so, you know, that then, you know, so allow, well, so it allows you to have invalid, well, invalid memory. Well, so revoke. But why would I ever want to revoke it? Say, hey, you got some memory.
The kernel should tell how the physical memory is used rather than the purposes themselves.
Well, the kernel, one of the jobs of the kernel is resource management.
Yeah, resource management.
Do we have infinite RAM?
No.
Do we have 2 to the 64 bytes of RAM? Anyone know how big 2 to the 64 is? So this is one thing you should, you know, so let's see if we can do this. Okay, so let's mark that off. So where this is, you know, hundreds of thousands, this is millions, this is billions. This is billions here. This is trillions here. This is quadrillions here. I think this is quintillion. I forget this. Yeah. No. You have nowhere close. We have lots of RAM. We don't have 64 bits worth of RAM. Nowhere close. To put it in bit terms, 32 bits is about 4 gigs. 32 bits of RAM. So every additional bit is doubling that. So on a modern computer, you can get, you know, 34 bits of RAM. If you go really fancy, maybe you go up to 35, 36, 37, maybe go to 40 if you're getting really large, like, you know. But, yeah, double every time. So 4 billion, 8 billion, 16 billion, 32 billion, 64, 128, 256, 512, 1024. Gigabytes. So 8 bits, you're at terabyte amounts of RAM, which is not inconceivable, but now keep doubling that. So as a computer scientist, you should get some intuitive sense of powers of 2. And as a rough, things in the 2 to the 32 range, we can kind of do stuff with, and once you get much above that, then we're really too big. Pretty soon you get to things you would need all the silicon on the planet in order to try making something, and still you wouldn't have enough. So, we do not have infinite RAM, yet each individual processor in a modern system can access 64 bits. That's the size of its virtual address space. So, no, the kernel cannot. I mean, because you can make a program really easy that would just start, you know, writing things to memory. Very quickly, given how fast computers are, you will run out of RAM if you just start incrementing up in addresses. RAM is finite. So what the operating system does is allows user space to explicitly manage how much RAM a given process is using. And basically, I want to use more, I want to use less. And if you try accessing RAM that you're not supposed to, then the operating system helps you out by sending you a signal saying, hey, you don't have that memory. By default, that crashes your program, but it does not have to. You can catch SegV, and you could use that for saying, oh, I used some memory I hadn't, I'll try allocating it. But that means you're really confident about how your pointers work. So typically, we don't do that. If you catch a SegV, it means you've been corrupted and you need to restart your application. So, it's a real thing. So when we talk about swapping just means you're pretending, you know, I've run out of RAM, and so I'm going to use disk to pretend like it's RAM. What's the problem with that? Disk is a lot slower. Even SSDs are slower than RAM. newer technology might change that, but yeah. So the real question with virtual memory is, how do you pull off this trick? And it's important to have a good mental model of how to do this. The full details of it, this gets into really hairy OS code. Hairy OS and CPU level stuff, and I do not expect you to know all that stuff. I do not understand all that stuff. I mean, it's a real specialty to understand how virtual memory is implemented in practice. But you should have a good, strong conceptual model of what it is, because conceptually, it's actually pretty simple. But it requires you to, to think a little bit about how you do memory allocation. So I have a problem. Well, first off, let's say I just want to, have a. So in general, need. So anywhere time you have an array is something that you increment through addresses. That's a C array is a very thin wrapper over incrementing over raw memory addresses. So in order to allocate arrays of any kind, you need contiguous memory. That goes for strings, and that goes for arrays of pointers or whatever. And the bigger you go. Now, if you have a tree is or some other pointer-based data structure, it may be filled with lots of small things, and you have references all over the place. But then if you do that too much, you use up all your space in pointers, which is not a good idea. So you normally want to allocate things more in chunks. Those chunks are really arrays of some kind, and you need a contiguous range. So you can't move a data structure in memory. You can't move because the pointers will become invalid, right? It's referring to address 2000, all of a sudden, I need to make a contiguous range, so I move it to here. You can't do that. So I might, if I might allocate a variable, or let's think of it in terms of object. I might allocate an object, and that object just might exist for the course of one function, one method, or whatever. It's an ephemeral object. Another one might exist for the entire lifetime of your program. Other ones will last for varying amounts. Some of them will be very large in their data requirements. Some of them very small. You have to stick them all in your address range. And choices that you make at the beginning will influence what you can do later on. Because let's just think of an address. So let's say we have, dash, not allocated. So let's start with a memory map here, and let's just say we've got some things here. So let's say that's our full address range. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that means you have to copy the data structure.
Right.
So you can move, you can do things, you can move it, but really what moving is you allocate a copy and you deallocate it, and then you have to update all the pointers. Now remember, updating pointers isn't necessarily so easy because you have to deal with the pointers that are at the top level and the variables you can access. But the other ones could be inside the data structure. So you have to update all of those. So it's not that you can't do it. You, if you're going to do it, you're going to probably have to do some other things. It's just something you don't want to do. That's you're just burning cycles, playing, moving around things in memory. It's kind of like, oh, can I fit this into my room? You know, well, if I move every other piece of furniture in my room, I can probably make this fit. And then I can't walk into the room. Does it fit? Not really. But technically, there is the volume for you to put it in there. You know, it's so that's what I'm saying. Like here, let's look at this memory map. We've got some. So this is all allocated, not allocated. Now let's say I have an allocation. Want to allocate something like this. Now, if you, well, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Well, actually, you don't need it that big. We'll just do something that's 8 long. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So we have more than enough space. If you just look at how many remaining slots are, I have at least 10 slots available here. But it's fragmented. There's not a contiguous range for us to put that in there. So the only way we could satisfy an allocation of this would be to move things, either to delete some of these things that were there. Like if we deleted this one right here, we'd be all set. But stick it in right there. But without deleting it or without moving it, we have enough memory available, yet we can't satisfy the allocation. So, this problem. You've fragmented your memory space. You've fragmented your heap. You wanted to put data structures on there. You should have room, but all of a sudden you don't have room. Now, on a modern system, 64-bit address space, you could just say to the kernel, hey, could I have more memory and say, oh, just give me a new allocation and I'll stick it on at the end here. Okay, sure, but remember, RAMs are limited resource. Eventually you run out. So we need a general strategy for how to deal with this fragmentation problem. So when you have variable size allocations, you have some amount of fragmentation. That's what happens. So how do you solve fragmentation? The solution is to use fixed sized allocations. But now you... So what I mean by that's a fragmentation too, so So for example, if your minimum, so this fragmentation issue also applies to disk. If you use a file to store one byte, the minimum size of a file is 4K. Well, you've just wasted, you know, the rest of 4K minus 1 bytes, because they're now allocated to that file, but that file is only using 1 byte. So this thing up here is really external fragmentation. So what we normally do is we choose to do allocation using fixed size chunks, and so we get internal fragmentation. So all low level allocations. So what you could do, you choose some fixed size for allocations. And then you just say a data structure has to fit inside of the allocation. That's all you get. That's the only contiguous thing. So we could say that, you know, to make things efficient, you can only have files that are 16K. All files are 16K, that's it. What if I want to store a megabyte? Get a bunch of files. It's your problem. You want to write a dissertation? It's going to be 1,000 files. That doesn't sound like much fun. So we have to... So remember, when we're really talking about addresses, we're really talking about indexing. So many problems in computer science can be solved by adding a level of indirection. That's all we're talking about here. So what happens with RAM? It happens the same. So with both. So disks, you allocate storage on disks in blocks. In RAM, you allocate it in, for memory, you allocate pages. That's the unit. Classically, And so what sizes do you see these in? Sizes are always a power of 2. Why are they a power of 2? Because indexes have to be stored in a fixed number of bits. All storage at a computer at the end of the day is bits. And so an index is bits. So to make full use of an index, to express all possible values of the index, it has to be a power of 2. I can express using 2 bits an index of up to 4, 0 through 3. Similarly, if I have 16 bits, I can express, you know, a range from 0 to 65535, which is 2^16 - 1. That's how, you know, powers of 2 comes in. This is why when we use this is why we traditionally, when you're talking about we'll say RAM, actually. That's why whenever you see addresses, they're in hexadecimal, because, you know, hexadecimal breaks down nicely. So if I want to say the, let's say I want to say the number, you know, A. What is A in decimal? I mean, sorry, in binary. 10 in binary. 10 in binary is, so it's not 0. So it's, actually, can I do that? Okay, I'm making my life difficult. I'm too tired to do this. Let's do 8. 8's a power of 2. So 8 is 100. Because that's, wait, no, that's wait, 4. Wait. No, that. 2^0, 2^1, 2^2, 2^3. So that's 8. Is that in binary? Which also maps, and you see this, well, I'm too tired to be trying to explain this. I took a red eye last night, so if I'm not coherent, I apologize. That's it. Each hexadecimal digit can map to 4 bits. An octal digit maps to 3 bits. Decimal digits don't map to bits because 10 is not expressed as a power of 2. So we do indexing using, oh, at the end of the day, are in bits. So use something that is kind of 4 bits. If you're talking about something in bits, you can talk about it in hexadecimal or octal, and it's really exactly the same thing. You're just compressing the representation down because you can map the bits directly to each octal digit or hexadecimal digit. So it's not computer science is being annoying. That's just what, you know, it maps as. Now, all this discussion of bits will be important when we talk about how we actually do memory addressing. So I talked here about this allocation thing. So if I want to avoid this problem of how do I fit this in, I can never actually do this. I never can say I want to have a contiguous range of things. I should be able to put these wherever I want. And the way you do that is you have a mapping. So with the mapping, I can change this so that... So what do I mean by a mapping? So let's say... So this is, you know... Let's just do this properly here. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7... So I have 8 slots here. If I say you can allocate things anywhere I want, so let's call this But I want to now give someone four units contiguously together. I want them mapped together. It's not possible here. It's impossible here. But if I define a mapping, so what would the mapping I'd want to have? I'd want to map 0 to, zero I can map to 0. Let's map 1, 2, 4. And then here, 1 to 4, 2 would go to 1, 3 would go to 3. Well, actually, no, sorry, 3 would go to 2. And then, so I'm trying to make a, so I'm trying to do now is I want the memory map to look like this. So how do I map this to that? So that, well, let's, this will be 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So I just needed to find a mapping. So whenever someone asks for a physical thing, if they're going to make an array, so the array is going to be so in this thing, the array is 0 to 3, it's contiguous, so I can say 0, 1, 2, 3. If I try doing that here and I just say, oh, you get 0, 2, 3, 4, do you like skipping over indices when you do arrays? No, that would be very painful. So I'm going to have every time you access an index to your array, I'm going to map it. So I'm saying when you access memory, location 0, 0 is fine. 0 goes to 0, fine. 1, that can't go. 1's got to go to 4, so we can go there. But then we can make 2 go to 2, actually 2 go to 3, and 3 go to 3. So 0, 2, 3, 4. And instead it goes to 0, 4, 2, 3. So when we do A of 2, array of 1, this is what we're talking about with virtual to physical mapping. Is this literally you're mapping on the fly? You're adding a table in here. So every time you want to index your array, you have to go through this. So instead of changing your for loop to do something really crazy with your indexing, you're instead going to have some table that you're going to look up things in. And that table will tell you where you're actually supposed to look. Sounds like a pain, right? Having a table to do this. This table So when I say an operating system maintains a virtual physical mapping, I'm just saying it does something like this at a much grander scale.
Why did you put the allocated memory at the end rather than the
Well, look, but look what I did by well, I didn't have to. It's going to be arbitrary. I mean, the advantage of putting it at the end, it means most of the other mappings were straight through. So the other ones, all the other ones are identity mappings, except for that one. But I could have instead just said, oh, let me move it over, and now you have to add one to all of them. But the idea is that this mapping is arbitrary. I don't care how I've done this. This can be all kinds of fragmented. Basically, the pieces, parts go all over the place. It doesn't matter. If I want a contiguous range, I'm going to pretend you have a contiguous range because I'm going to have a mapping that will give it to you. But in reality, it's scattered all over the place. So process virtual addresses are contiguous now when I say it's not contiguous at the boundary of allocation. You don't want to actually have this table, a table for mapping every byte in memory to another byte would be very big. That's not the way you want to do it. You don't want to do it on a byte-by-byte map. You could do it, but it's very inefficient. So that's why I was saying these are, you know, slots. These are units of allocation. We want to use them in bigger chunks. So the chunks we want to do them in, you know, table maps 4K or more at a time. Power of 2. You do a power of 2 mapping for this. Why is a power of 2 really nice? Because remember, it divides along a bit boundary. And how a bit boundary works out is really nice. So let's say I want to allocate 30, let's say I want to have, I have a 32-bit system, 32-bit addresses. If I have 32-bit addresses, but I want to allocate them in 4K units. How many bits do I need to represent a 4K offset? So you know a byte is 8 bits. That you should know. So a byte's 8 bits, so let's count. So 8 bits is 256. So 256, 512, 1024, 2048, 4096. So 4 bits plus 8 bits. So we have no contiguous storage in physical memory for anything larger than 4K. If you put something smaller than 4K in memory, in you know like an array, it's gonna fit in that page, and it will be in a continuous range of bytes in your virtual address space and your physical address space. They'll both there because that's the unit of allocation. Yes. What's 12 bits? So 8 bits is 256, okay? Because that is, so 8 bits, i.e., when I say 8 bits, 2 to the 8 is 256. I can count this off you. 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256. And then I just keep doubling. 512, 1024, 2048, 4096. So 2 to the 12 equals 4096, which is 4K. When I say 4K, it's 4,096, which is 2 to the 12. So all powers of 2. It's useful if you get to know certain powers of 2 when you're doing memory allocation, when you're talking about memory. I have a bit of an advantage over you all because when the computers I grew up with had things like 64K of memory, and that was a lot. And so you actually kind of had, like, you did things, it was all like, okay, I have to kind of know, you're playing with those bits. Now we have so much memory that to actually think about in this level gets kind of annoying. So, anyway, but typically 4K, sometimes you go to 8K, so in that case it's 13 bits. But it's a 32-bit address. So, upper 20 bits. So that's the, so think of it this way. What you're doing here with this, you know, the memory map is instead, these little things are all referring each to 4K. And how many of them do I have? I have potentially up to 2 to the 20. You know, what's 2 to the 20? It's a million. I'm pretty sure 2 to the 20. Yeah, basically a million. So I have roughly a million slots to stick 4K in the virtual address, you know, in the address space. So I just have to figure out a mapping for a million things. That seems a little more doable. Right? Now, the trick now is, how do I create I need a data structure that can map 20 bits to 20 bits. That's what we're, that's all we're gonna do. We're gonna have a virtual address. So with this, I map the upper 20 bits and copy the lower 12 bits. So in order to convert a virtual to a physical address, what I do is I look up at a table, and I look at a table that tells me the value of 20 bits to 20 bits, that maps that, and the bottom 12 bits I just copy over, because that's the lower 12 bits is a page offset. Basically, it's inside your fixed size location. It's like, what byte do you want in it? Which page are we talking about? We can have up to a million pages. Which page are you talking about? And in that page, where are you doing it? So it's like, think of it this way. This is evocative of a book. The page number is, which page in the book is it? And the offset is, which word on the page or which character on the page are you talking about? If you then so let's say you couldn't actually put all the pages of the book in the right order, so instead you had them shuffled. Let's say you took the page of the book out and like lost them. They're like, okay, now I have to read them. Okay, take the fifth page in your stack and actually read that first, and then read this 22nd, because that actually is page 1. The 22nd page in your stack is actually page 2, and so on and so forth. That's the metaphor here. But in order to do this efficiently, I need to figure out how to store the mappings. So specifically, I want to have a page to a frame mapping. So when I say a frame, think of it this way. When you have this random shuffling of pages, when you actually want to read a page, you have to... Let's say I take this table, and I want to view... I've got a stack of pages that I want to look at. I have to put the pages on the table so I can read them. How many pages can I fit on this table? Maybe I can fit like 20 pages or something. Where do I put them? I have, let's say, a number of the locations of where I can put them uniquely. Those are frames. You think almost like a picture frame. So I can stick one here, I can stick one here, on different places on the desk. And those all can have a unique location. Frames are RAM. Pages are in. So I actually use it, I have to stick a page and put it in RAM. Until it's actually on the table, I can't read it. So the magic of the data structure here is have to store I have to store the pages, page to frame mapping in pages. And I can't have them contiguous. Because that would require solving the problem that I'm actually using this to solve. The units of this data structure will be bigger than my unit of allocation. I can't fit a million mappings into 4K. They won't all fit. It's going to require many pages to store this. I have to store this in RAM. But I can't store it contiguously in RAM. Like if I had a giant array or something, that would be solved. But no, it's going to be pieces, parts all over memory. So I can have pointers to refer to different parts of memory. But how do I organize this data structure? So really what it is, you need to have, you're going to divide up the array into parts. So the way we do this, so it's called a page table, but really it's a tree. And it's a tree because let me just look, show you that. Let's just look at the Wikipedia. It'll have a nice, oh yeah. Okay, yeah. Show me the nice picture. Okay, this. No, they don't have a good picture. That's, okay, this is all showing the bits and the things, but that was not the kind of picture I was looking for. I really don't want to draw it. Okay, yeah, I have to talk about TLBs. So this is all virtual address space, physical address space. This is all the stuff I've been talking about. Do we have a nice? Ah, fine. I'll have to draw you something here. So a page. So let's have pointers. We'll have a. So let's have an array of. Let me make sure. I'll do them. Okay, I'm doing six. Actually, I'm not doing them consistently. Let's do six. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So let's say each of these is a page. Each of these is going to have some location in memory. So these pages are going to have number. Well, the number. This may not work. So we have a we have these pages. We're saying this is our 4K and it has some number associated with it. So we need to map these numbers inside of a page. How do we map them? Well, you just fit as many of them as you can into one page. So that's the basic, how many mappings can I fit inside of one page? A page is 4K. Right now we're doing every address is 32 bits. Now it turns out we won't need, we're gonna do this in 32 bits. So how many 32 bit things can I fit into a page? Let's do this in powers of two. It makes it much simpler. So address is 32 bits. So eight, what is 32? So that's two. Sorry. Four. There. How many 4 bytes can I fit into here? So that I can divide it by there. I can fit 4. So let's think of it this way. I have a page. I can fit 1,024 pointers in it. So if I can fit 1,024 pointers into it, how much of the problem has that solved? So let's say I just had, I could just use a single 4K page for my address space, for my pointers. And I assume my pointers are 32 bits. How much physical memory could I have? How many pages is that? 1,024. So 1,024 pages times 4,096. That's not bad. You know? That's like 4 megabytes. With one page, we can get 4 megabytes of mappings. So that takes care of 1,024, that's 10 bits. I only had 4 megs. If I only had 4 megabytes, I could do it all in one page. So that means for every process, I would just need one page to map everything, and I'd be done. But what if I want more? How do I get more? What's the standard way you could do this? Why don't I have a page that points to pages? Add a level of indirection, right? I want more, I have a page that points to pages. Right, so I have 1,024 pointers referring to each. Page, each of those pages has that's the data structure. You start with this is one page. So this is 1,024 times 1,024 times 1,024. Now this is 2 to the 10. Notice the nice thing, we're just adding bits. It's easier to go from these when you just go. So to do a page table, you just have the table fits in one page. And when you run out of the table fitting in one page, you make a table that of tables. And then yeah, so you get it all. And notice these are each 10 bits. We have 10 bits of these. And then these each take 10 bits. So we have 10 bits to refer to an offset here and 10 bits for here. And then need 10 bits for offset in page directory. Ten plus ten plus twelve equals 32. So you need to, the first one to figure out which of the 1024 bits I'm 1024 pointers I'm referring to, I use the first 10 bits. The next 10 bits are used to figure out, okay, for that one, which one of those? You know, which pointer I go to. And the last 12 bits are saying which byte do I want in the page. I'll see if I can come up next time with a kind of a way to show this better, but that's really what we're, this is just implementation details. And of course, on modern systems, it's more complicated because we have to do this for 64 bits. So instead of doing this with two levels, we have to have three levels or even four levels of indirection. But it's the same idea that upper bits, you divide the address that you're mapping into bit ranges, and each of those is a table. Each of those is an index into an array, and we just combine them together. It's as data structures go, it's actually kind of dumb. I mean, it's a really simple thing. Compared to what you learn in your algorithms class, this is like really simple, but it's also really fast and easy to implement in hardware, which is why we do this. I mean, is there a hash table in here? I mean, we could have said, oh, you want to map a number to a number, why don't I do a hash table? But a hash table requires computation. This requires no computation. This is pure memory lookup. This is stuff really easy to implement in hardware. So if you look in the book, I know it has this nicely explained. You'll have nice pictures for this. This is not something I'm going to directly... a lot of classic operating systems courses make you do address calculations. I'm not going to have you do address calculations because I think that's kind of silly, because the only person who really has to figure this out is the designer of the processor. But what you do need to do, because these data structures are actually encoded in hardware, but what you do need to understand is this concept, because the notion of a page table and the management of page tables is a key concern of an operating system, because that's what different processes, that's what makes a process, is that mapping. And when you talk about doing mmaps, we're talking about manipulating this data structure. Now, I actually had a little lie in here, which I will leave for next time, which is that I said, I'm going to allocate four. Each pointer is 4 bytes. I don't actually need 4 bytes if you look at these tables. I only need about, I don't need 4 bytes. I only need like 2.5 bytes. I've got, instead of 32 bits, I only need 20 bits. The lower 12 bits are actually extra, but we need them for other purposes. And we'll talk about what we use those bits for next time.